time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
It's WHFR, Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. You heard me in the background
there. I did, too.
I was here. Shouldn't try to mess up too much at the end of the year. I mean, we should be at our peak here, right, Dennis? Dennis Reimars joining me on the air today.
Good afternoon. You know, I have to ask you something. I know that you're not, I don't think you're a superstitious person, but have you ever heard of the adage that whatever you're doing at midnight on the 31st of January, or of December, is what you'll be doing predominantly the rest of the year? Of the new year? Have you ever heard this?
I mean, being drunk? No, I don't think that.
Drunk or eating or whatever.
No, I haven't heard that.
You never heard that?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, I didn't make that up. So if anybody has heard that, please email me. Because I'm curious.
If that was true, then I'd be watching Dick Clark in Times Square for the rest of the year.
I don't think it's literally.
I think he goes home after.
But do you watch a lot of television?
Yeah, sure.
Well, there you go. Then it is true.
Well. Yeah, but usually people party and go crazy. And we hope you, this is, of course, the new WHFR Journal, and it's our end of the year show just because it's the end of the year. Okay.
Right.
And so it should be just as, we got a fantastic show coming up as usual with some end of the year ramblings by Dennis and myself. And my name is Jay Koronick. I'm station advisor here at WHFR FM. Happy holidays, end of the holidays to you. Of course, if you're with the Armenian Orthodox Church, as Ned Apigian always reminds us here from our staff, January 6th the day they celebrate. And I found out that that's because the calendar sent back by 11 days for some reason, about 400 AD.
Sent back?
Yeah. They
a recall.
Yeah. It's like you could live over the 11 days all over again because they changed the calendar and then, whoa.
That happens only once every 2 million years, though. So.
Well, a couple thousand years. There was a correction because of the seasons and whatever. But so all the holidays, including Christmas, jump back. And so it jumped back from January 6th, in effect, to the 25th of December. Duh. And some people, and this is in the Press and Guide this week, it's kind of interesting, besides the Armenian church issue, it's in the Press and Guide from just 2 days ago, the 28th. Today is 12/30, 2011. Anyway, the Jehovah's Witnesses people, the people that come and knock on your door, and I know a lot of people don't like them because they feel that the witnesses are too intrusive, but remember they are a Christian religion, okay, if that means anything, and they just see the in-person sharing of
ministering
from the Bible as an important to what they do. And even in the new modern world, they haven't. I don't know if they have a Facebook page or not, but I don't think they would be into that. You know, the in-person stuff is very important. We've got scheduled an interview coming up with the author of the books of
The Locator
coming up on January 13th. And it's Richard Greener, probably by phone, because I think he's in California, because they're making his two novels so far into a TV series called The Finder.
That's
for
right.
Fox. And in fact, The Bones Show, when we play their Bones theme, of course, will not be on in January at all, but The Finder will be in the place 9 to 10 p.m. on Thursdays. Greener has a fantastically interesting story.
Yeah.
And especially for seniors who might have some heart problems, this guy has suffered and triumphed. And there's an interesting story. Hopefully we can keep him on the air long enough that we can talk about that too. And in fact, he's even had counsel and advice from President Bill Clinton and so on during his down period, if you will.
Right.
And writing a book, writing these books was just, it's all he could do because he was in bed recuperating for a lot of this time. In 2007, he received a new heart, a heart transplant, a complete transplant. He says he feels as young as 29 now. It's after 30 years of suffering with different heart procedures and so on. But he wrote this book in 2004, the first Locator story.
And how long before a movie about his life is out there?
Well, I don't know. It's a fascinating story, and we're going to share some of that with you. But the point is here, triumph over adversity, I guess, but also that Jehovah's Witnesses don't accept Christmas as a holiday. I didn't know that, and I have done some reading and research on a lot of religions that are into peace and nonviolence as a primary motive for their existence, and that's Jehovah's Witnesses, certainly. But they believe that you should act like every day is a holy day, and that you should treat everyone equally, which is certainly the bottom line for me, too. You can't give presents every day, but they point out how celebration of Jesus' birth, and they do, they're Christian, they believe, you know, in his significance, godness, and so on. Nothing in the Bible about Christmas or that celebration. They said the only thing about that time of year it's ever been celebrated, as mentioned in the Bible, is the winter solstice, which is a pagan kind of holiday.
Right.
And in fact, the Catholic Church almost on purpose tried to, you know, usurp that connection. In fact, they've done that across the world as they spread Catholicism, that they would build a church on a pagan ritual ground just so the pagans in the area would keep coming back.
Kind of like in your face, though. We can do this, you can't.
Well, of course, it was a way to convert as many as possible by using a lot of their traditions and practices, but making it Christian, clearly, and then building churches on their pagan ritual grounds and so on.
Well, I mean...
I'm just saying that Jehovah's Witnesses, great people. If you see them at the door, don't treat them badly, folks. They really are believers and very kind, gentle people, okay? They're not going to be in your face, nasty, or anything like that.
Do they celebrate, if I'm not mistaken, birthdays aren't celebrated either?
I'm not sure about that.
I had a coworker years ago that her daughter did not go out for Halloween. You know, they didn't. That wasn't because obviously that's not Christian or otherwise that particular. You know, going out to collect candy, but she didn't celebrate birthdays either. And I thought it was very interesting. And otherwise, I mean, it was just like working with anybody else. But certain of her beliefs surfaced that were so unique. You know.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So I thought that was interesting. And I don't know if that's just her and her family or if that was a universal thing for the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Well, I think the bottom line here is, of course, we're facing a big holiday, a New Year's celebration, which is not necessarily connected to any particular religion at all. Be careful out there, folks. Okay, don't party so hard that you're going to cause trouble. We have a little... interesting commentary from Stephen J. Dubner of Freakonomics. It's going to be featured at the end of our show, and it's good to point that out. Obviously, I hope if you're going to go to a party and have to come back from a party, and there's going to be drinking, or other unregulated substances, you certainly want to have a designated driver, somebody that has not been, who is not in the clouds.
Under an influence.
I don't like cloud computing. I don't like cloud driving either.
Okay,
I think that's a bad precedent. Okay, moving on, though, I looked at a couple stories here, just going very quickly through the papers on Christmas, and this is always a slow news time because, you know, the branches of government are not acting, the kids are out of school, and so there's not any particular crises that are happening other than the Detroit going bankrupt ongoing saga.
Right, that's nothing, that's not just particular to this time of year.
No, no. And I thought I should draw your attention to Tim Skupik's editorial opinion about the proposed bridge to Windsor. Was doomed from the outset, and this is on page 8A of Christmas edition. He is, of course, the host of a show called Off the Record that is on public television in this area on WOW. It's either on Channel 8 out of Flint on Friday nights, which I think is when it's usually broadcast to public TV, and I'm not sure when Channel 56, Detroit Public Television, puts it on the air. I think they still might do it on Sunday mornings. That's where it's been for many years. A little half-hour show right in Lansing and right talking to these lawmakers, your elected representatives, and we just don't usually hear this story at all in the papers. I continue to applaud the Press and Guide for subscribing. I don't know if Skupik charges him any money for his View from Lansing column, but it's worth every penny if you actually want to see behind the scenes and what's happening in Lansing. Because if anybody knows and has followed it for 30 years, my golly, it's Tim Skupik. You know, Governor Rick Snyder, in fact, just in the last day or so, he listed the three big things that he did wrong this year.
Yeah.
Even though his lieutenant governor, can you remember his name? Dennis, this is a quiz.
His lieutenant governor?
Who's the lieutenant governor of the state of Michigan? There we go. Brian Kelly or Collie.
Kelly, mm-hmm. Sure.
He just sent an email proclaiming all the achievements of the Snyder administration.
Not just three?
No, four or five. I mean, we have a better credit rating nationally.
Yeah, true.
And of course, there was a lot of bills passed, a lot of bills. Some people, of course, didn't like that tax on
pensions.
That's really going to hurt, and it may hurt the governor next year and some elections. We don't know. They're hoping, Republicans are hoping, that people will forget and just pay the tax without even thinking about it. I won't forget. But nonetheless, this comment from Skupik is about the bridge to Windsor, and he says it was doomed from the outset, and he indicates a few problems. First of all, some Republicans didn't like Snyder supporting this because the Democrats wanted it. You don't want to help those Democrats with any of their agendas.
Right, so that's bipartisan, right?
Not at all,
of course.
Yeah, and Snyder even made a fantastic quote. He says, issue, whether or not to build the second bridge to Windsor, is not about R's and D's. That's not research and development. It's about Republican or Democrat. Because he said, as a business person, he's got the facts. This will bring jobs. Okay? This will bring jobs. And either the Republicans don't like jobs or they don't like the fact that the Democrats were in favor of this first, therefore making the Democrats feel that they accomplished something,
Right.
You don't want that ever, even if it's good for the state of Michigan, apparently. And apparently he points out the push and shove, and Brian Kelly is also given, since he's kind of a intermediary, always has been, between the Senate, especially in Michigan, and the governor's office. He's sort of a negotiator. He takes the front of the negotiations with the senators, and especially. And they were a little late to start, and he thinks the governor erred because he should have done the bridge maybe first when he had that, the wheels in motion, because after so many months, after you got the budget together and these other bills passed, the tax on pensions, that the big money from Mike Moran, who owns the Ambassador Bridge, billionaire, isn't he? Or at least $100 million. Very rich person. Certainly we can call him super rich. His attack ads won the day, and additional money that he paid into the coffers of Republican legislators So he's like bribing them with, you know, adding to their political slush funds and making them aware that, hey, you know, if you vote the wrong way on this, well, I'm not going to give you contributions next year.
So what are you saying there, that after all of the money that Snyder was asking for the different things, canceling incentives and all the different things, you're saying the public was not ready for something like this?
Right.
For another expenditure?
Well, the public was not ready because of all the false statements that were made in those ads. And
right.
Skupik feels that the governor didn't come out and talk to the public about, you know, he kept saying, all those, they're wrong, or those are false, or they're overstated. And but that was just a little side comment.
Right.
He never made a big campaign about that.
I have to agree with him.
But it also gave time for new money, new contributions, or new bribes, if you want to call it that, from Moran to come into the significant Republicans for about 8 months or so. And, you know, this isn't helping anybody but Moran. He's going to make more and more profit even though he says there's fewer and fewer people crossing the bridge. By the way, I just heard today, crossing the bridge is going up. He's raising the price.
Yeah.
50 cents more. So it'll be $4 a car instead of $3.50 starting January 1st. So happy New Year, everybody. This is what Mike Moran is giving back to the community. Of course, they say the bridge is about ready to fall apart. I'm sorry, but it's 54 years old. And in order to afford the maintenance, and he's not going to take it out of his profit margin, they've got to charge the people that are crossing more money.
But
how did they maintain it without shutting it down significantly?
Right.
You know, it seems to me like all these other bridges like Southfield, they're going to do significant maintenance on a 54-year-old bridge. Oh, my gosh, they can't keep it open to traffic or full traffic that time. So it would really be helpful if there was a second bridge that they could sort of send people to while the first bridge was being repaired, and then both of them.
But that was never even brought up.
No, they didn't even care about that.
It makes sense for so many reasons, that not being the least. I remember when they shut down the tunnel for a while when they were doing work on it.
Right.
The
tunnel is part of that, I think. Is that owned by Moran, too?
I have no idea.
I thought
he just owned the bridge.
That may be the case, yeah. Well, obviously, water starts leaking in from the top of the tunnel. You got to shut it down to get in there.
Sure. What's older, the bridge or the tunnel? I would venture the bridge.
I think the bridge is older, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So anyway, there's some false moves, some politicking. It's always a matter of legislative agenda and working with the people involved. If it was just a matter of, hey, do you like this idea or not? Yes or no. But there's committees and there's, you know, lobbyists being bribing. That's what I think. You know, the opinions in the show are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College. I think lobbyist money is just simple bribes. You can see it however you want to. I think the legislators should have their doors open, listen to all concerned, including appointed representatives, like people, you know, who have an association representing all of, I don't know, the cattle owners in Michigan or whatever. But I don't think they should take the money from them. I just don't. I think it should just be individuals, and that should be limits and all that's, corporations are not people and so on. Okay, well, it's a very interesting insight, and we'll see where Snyder goes next year. Will he bring back the bridge proposal? It looks like Skupik thinks it's doomed. And it will never happen now, the second bridge. And that's too bad for the people of Michigan, according to the facts, according to all the research and the facts about the job creations and increased business that would make possible.
So the idea that the numbers of people crossing the bridge, those numbers are going down, is simply what Moran states. There's no facts to back that up.
Well, I think part of it is... No, I think he has some facts on that, but he hasn't done. Remember, he was found guilty in court just this last month for not doing $200 million of upgrades to the approach area on the Detroit side of the bridge. He promised that a couple years ago because trucks were having problem cars and, you know, access in and out. And so that would have made it easier for more people to travel back and forth He was given some sort of sentence in court. He was found guilty of not doing that, and we just don't know. It's sort of like the West Dearborn Development Authority, how that guilt is going to be played out in terms of is he ever going to get around to doing that $200 million? It's easier for him to say, oh, well, look at all the things I'm doing here. But now, since he owns the bridge exclusively and the second one maybe not be happening at all, He can do anything he wants to. I mean, are they going to throw him in jail because he didn't do the $200 million improvement? I think he should. They should, but because he was found guilty in court of reneging on that contract. So I don't know what they're going to do, but we'll see where that goes. So that's that does it. I mean, I haven't gone to Canada in a long time, and I love to go to Canada before 9/11. I mean, I got my passport and everything. I'm not afraid. I got my specially endorsed small card, you know, that I can carry instead of the full passport if needed. That's not the issue. It's the long waits, you know, the delays at the border, and often the repairs that slow down things too. If there was a second bridge, and of course I wanted that second bridge more downriver, like around Wyandotte or whatever,
right?
Because that would give a lot more business growth to those communities. But I think they say it's just a quarter mile south, or I mean, within you could see the ambassador easily, and that's where they want to put the second bridge. So it's still downtown Detroit,
right?
But they've done some studies because of the warehouses down there and connection to all the different expressways close by. It might be better, I guess.
So is the theory that the Canadians will come over and spend more money because we have, what, better shopping, cheaper gas? I mean, is that... And that will create more jobs because more money's...
Right now, Canadian dollar is worth more than ours. So.
Sure. I mean, I have many Canadian relatives. I love Canada. It's just I just didn't see the correlation between more work and them, because we're not saying we want the bridge so we have more jobs for us to go to in Canada, and we don't want to invite Canadians to come here and work our jobs. So the only thing I could logically think of is they'll spend more money here.
Yeah, I don't want to have to wait that long at the border. That's my main problem.
Yeah,
Or coming back. It's usually a half an hour to an hour wait whenever I do it, and I try to avoid the busy times.
That's a logical argument. I just didn't understand how this would create more money. And I'm thinking about all of the different things. It just doesn't seem like it would be that much more money because we invite the Canadians to come over. Do you know what I mean? So I'm being very short-sighted, but I have to admit
somebody, you know, if Snyder's done the research, he's a Republican. He knows business, supposedly. He's a businessman. So
that's all you had to say.
He must trust the facts, but interestingly, most Republicans don't. And it's interesting, too, just as a flip-flop here, you know, so many Republicans in Washington, D.C. have signed this little pledge from this outside lobbyist guy, and I forget his name, not to raise new taxes no matter what.
Yeah.
Here in Michigan, I wish the Republicans would have done that. We wouldn't have this pension tax.
Right.
You know, they lowered the tax on corporations, businesses in Michigan by a little bit, but they just simplified it too, which I was all in favor of. They didn't lower it that much, really, but they simplified the processing and the projections of how much you'd pay if you were a business person. And so I don't mind that that extra drain or that loss of income there, because it's not that much of a tax break for the new businesses. And we were already like in the middle of the states.
Contrary to what people said.
We didn't have the highest taxation rate on businesses in this country anyway. So instead of being 24th, we may now be 20th or something in terms of business tax.
That's fine.
But it makes us a little more competitive. But the pension tax, for Pete's sake, you know, on the people that are retired on fixed incomes, you know, might as well tax the poor more, too, while you're at it. Oh, that's right. They can't pay because they have no money. Oh, it's too bad. Okay. So, interesting story. Also in that from Christmas, the story about Ford Motor Company. Profits. We know they've been making profits the last couple of years, but I just saw the summary headline in their end-of-the-year big stories. This year, 2011, was the best year for profits for Ford Motor Company in 10 years.
Right.
10 years. Okay, so that goes back to even before 9/11, okay?
Right.
I mean, a little bit, you know.
Sure.
2001. You know, I still, of course, they had to lay off a lot of people in order to get to that profit margin.
Exactly.
They had to downsize their business because they weren't making the cars that people wanted, really. They weren't making the right size, and I think they're back on track now. And so that's why they're booming and good for them. But, Ford Motor Company, if you're listening, you better keep reinvesting in jobs and facilities in the Dearborn and the surrounding area here just to prove that you're a good citizen.
Yeah, pay your taxes. Look for loopholes.
If corporations are people, I would hope that corporations could also be good citizens, too.
Oh,
there you go.
Write
how do you
that
like
down.
That?
That's profound.
Yeah. Okay, end of the year. That
Happy
happens.
New Year on that one.
Yeah. Let's turn to the Dearborn Times-Herald. I heard a speech by Representative George Duraney. He's the Michigan rep from this area to Lansing. He's a Democrat. And he gave a speech, which he turned pretty much into a printed
an editorial
essay,
almost.
An editorial opinion. And it's on page 4A of the Times Herald that is dated this Wednesday. They do have a website, don't they? You told me about this, Dennis. It's some sort of downrivertimesherald.com or something.
It's downriversundaytimes.com.
That's it, downriversundaytimes.com. So mm-hmm. I don't know if they put the editorials in there or
they
not.
They did. That's where yeah. I got my...
But Duraney didn't get into, at least he didn't get into either one of this week's press and guides. And so he sums up. I think this is very good. It's very long, but he sums up how he went there. You know, he's a newbie in the legislature. But he tried to work with the Republicans. He got on the Education Committee. Good for him. He's one of the two or three only Democrats that are on the Education Committee, which is so important for the future of the state, to go in the right direction there. And it tells a very, very sad story that Democrats were not allowed to debate issues. They were either not called on by the Republican chair, and it's interesting that the Republican chair of the Education Committee was one of the Republicans who have been recalled this year. So he's not there anymore. His own voters from his own district, there was a recall campaign, and it succeeded. But, of course, another Republican, and Duraney said he's even worse, has taken over as the chair in terms of shouting down, not recognizing, not allowing debate on issues that Republicans were in favor of in terms of, hurting teachers, going after teachers, teacher rights, teacher negotiations statewide, you know. If teachers were doing something badly, I would know. My daughter is a K-12 teacher. I've been a teacher at Henry Ford Community College. I try to be objective. I see an awful lot of people guiding our youth of the future, youth who will become our leaders of the future, as best they can with almost no resources, with almost no significant direction on goals, and the worst facilities I've ever seen for some of the schools and the repair of the schools, and we should be putting some money there. And you say, oh, well, they're getting so much money for what they have to do. They should be making the best salaries like they do in Finland and Sweden. They should be making the best salaries of everybody if they're doing a good job and if they can prove it, of course, and if they're getting the results. And they certainly are getting those results. A little bit of a segue here. We've always featured Jim Hightower comments over the years and in each show. And I wonder which one it is.
Is this the Jim Hightower?
Yeah, let's see if this spot is the one I'm thinking of. It's entitled America, a Beacon of Social Justice. And I think this is the one where he talks about who's number one in the world. Because everybody says, oh, we're number one. Yeah, well, take a listen to Hightower. It's only one commentary here. Dennis, you were going to say?
His titles are always almost contradictory.
Sometimes.
He's almost sarcastic.
Sometimes. Here we go. Jim Hightower.
USA, we're number one. Oh, wait. Iceland is number one. But we did beat out Poland and Slovakia, right? No. But going down the rankings, and there we are, number 27, fifth from the bottom. So our new national chant is USA, at least we're not last. A foundation in Germany has analyzed the social justice records of all 31 members of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, ranking each nation in such categories as health care, income inequality, preschool education, and child poverty rate. The overall performance by the U.S., which boasts of being an egalitarian society, outranks only Greece, Chile, Mexico, and Turkey. Actually, even three of those countries performed better than ours in the education of preschoolers, and Greece did better than the U.S. on the prevention of poverty. Being at the bottom of the heap in social justice confirms the reality of both economic and political inequality that the Occupy Wall Street movement is protesting. It also helps explain why Occupy's grassroots uprising in America has spread so rapidly to more than 600 communities and has generated such broad public support. After all, our nation is fabulously rich, ranking well ahead of nearly all OECD members in national wealth, So there's no excuse for us sitting at the bottom of the list in education, health care, poverty, and other measures of a democratic and egalitarian society. This is Jim Hightower saying, bluntly put, we the people have let today's elites abandon America's founding principles of fairness, justice, and equal opportunity for all. These privileged few have purchased our government, stolen the wealth and economic future of working families, and reduced America to a plastic imitation of the country we thought we had. The Occupy Rebellion is overdue. Join it.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
So go Iceland.
Yeah. And Poland and Slovakia.
Yep.
That's funny. No, like I said, I mean, his usually his the headline or the title to his little oration is kind of, I don't know, what do you want to call it, almost contradictory to what he's saying, which I love.
Right, right.
Makes his point.
Okay, well, so now on the new WHFR journal station making waves, WHFR.fm. 89.3 FM, and on the web at WHFR.fm. Remember, you can listen to these shows over again and again and again. They're on our website, archived after 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on any Friday. You get the new edition. Maybe you're listening that way now. Happy New Year to you if it's already the new year. Since it is the end of the year show, and the papers are always doing things like top stories for 2001, I picked a few out of the list in the Dearborn Press and Guide from this last Wednesday. And I don't know if Dennis has this in front of him. Probably not. Let's see where the heck that is. One of these papers here. Here. Yeah. Okay. Here. You can have it, Dennis.
Well, actually, okay. I have my own list. And I tend to go not with what they choose.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like sensationalism.
They had, you know, they put the number one top story they thought was Pastor Terry Jones coming into Dearborn trying to protest against Islam. Yeah. So what? I mean, it's we have a right to protest. I don't see why it's a big story. Okay, protesting Islam, they're certainly not showing freedom of religion, or he's not, but you know, but he thinks there's a problem there and so on. He has a right to protest. I wouldn't have covered him. I wouldn't have made a big deal out of it and just let him flap in the wind, sort of. But of course, he wanted to do it during the religious season of Easter, and in a location that any additional traffic, even supporters of his coming in there, would have caused an accessibility problem, in fact, to the churches and the religious facilities there on, is it called Church Drive or Religious Drive or something up there where they're
I don't know.
North of Ford Road
we're talking about. You do, to clarify, you do know why this is a story. You just don't think it should be.
I know. Yeah. I don't think it should
be.
And
I think that you feel that the media giving it attention is really, that's the story.
Exactly. Okay. I mean, he can go and burn a Quran because it gets on the media. It's really big deal, significant, and we're reviled around the world, and there's terrorist attacks and suicide bombers even killing people in the Middle East because Jones decided to burn a Quran in the media.
Right.
Oh, gee whiz.
And then coming up here, obviously, that caused CNN to come into the picture.
Well, of course. When you make a media circus out of it, you're going to get some lions and tigers that escape.
Whoa. And, boy, you're on a roll today. Write this stuff down,
they're dangerous,
folks.
Yeah.
Yes, very
okay.
much so.
Okay. Story number four is, and I'm all in favor of this, high-speed rail put on fast track. I love that because it's a metaphoric pun, too.
Love it.
It's just, we may not have the money to operate it, but at least the train station is going ahead, and we did get an additional, thanks to Governor Snyder, accepting federal money that Florida turned down. That we'll get a high-speed rail extension from the Detroit area all the way to about Kalamazoo. So not to Chicago yet, but, well, it's better than nothing. Now, we still don't have operational money for the new trains, high speed or not, and the new people that have to be on those trains to operate them. That's a problem for me, but we'll see where that goes. At least that train station is going to be built, and now we had the sustainability grant from a week ago, which is really not going to, that's not going to cost us anything, so that it'll be more energy efficient and help our environment more in that location. It's interesting to me that out of their top 10, two of them were related to the killing of Osama bin Laden. And of course, I don't think that's local, But
the reaction is, because this is a high concentration. Okay.
Well, now here comes Kornick's opinions on this, though.
Okay.
I think two of the worst things that got set up nationally that does affect us locally, too, is the precedent set by the killing of Osama bin Laden and the killing of a U.S. citizen in the Middle East by executive order only. The president said, this is President Obama, I've got the right, if I think they're a threat to the U.S., to order the assassination, the killing, the murder of anybody I want to, including a U.S. citizen. And that goes along with the Patriot Act, which says the president, through Homeland Security, can detain forever, if desired, without trial, without benefit of trial or review or anything, anybody they say is a terrorist. And I just saw a survey of the Republicans campaigning in Iowa these days. And except for Ron Paul, who is the libertarian that says government shouldn't have that power. We have, in fact, here, I can find it somewhere.
What are you looking for?
Press release from the Libertarian Party. And, of course, Ron Paul is not the Libertarian Party and vice versa, although he did run as a Libertarian candidate for president in 92. They say indefinite detention provisions are wrong. Okay, Libertarian Party Chair Mark Hinkle, this is from December 2nd, released the following statement today regarding the indefinite detention provisions, the Senate version of the National Defense Authorization Act of 2012. The Obama administration has already claimed that the president has the authority to kill Americans overseas if he believes they are terrorists. Now, in the latest National Defense Authorization Act, which did pass, by the way, Congress is trying to give the president, they did give the president power to imprison Americans indefinitely without charges or respect for habeas corpus if he claims, if the president claims that they are terrorists. Democrats and Republicans in the Senate have already joined hands to pass the bill. And the Libertarian Party says, this contempt for our rights is outrageous.
Absolutely.
When I grew up, the essence, and was taught to me in the schools, I know those liberal schools, and it says so in the Constitution, that we have a right to a speedy trial by jury, okay, if needed. You can't just pick somebody up for no reason. There has to be a reason in before they can arrest someone. Has to be enough evidence or whatever to even detain
someone. Just
cause
to even detain
them.
Sure,
exactly.
Sure.
Okay.
There's due process to get them through the system. I mean, this it's breaking all of the rules.
Again, I state, as the Libertarian Party does and Ron Paul does as Republican, this contempt for our rights is outrageous. Any member of Congress who supports that provision is grossly violating his or her oath to uphold the Constitution. If the president thinks you are a terrorist, they go on to say, let him present charges and evidence to a judge. He has no authority to lock you up without any judicial review just because he and Congress believe he should have unlimited power. That is the kind of power held by tyrants in totalitarian regimes. It has no place in the United States. Now he goes on to conclude, Libertarian Party opposes terrorism. Of course they do. We all do, right? We all except, hey, in our Revolutionary War, how did we fight it against the British? We were terrorists.
It's the only way we could win.
Okay, we guerrilla did warfare. The unfair thing, right? We hid behind trees to shoot at the British in their bright uniforms. We
the antiquated method
dirty,
of lining up
dirty
those.
Fighting, dirty fighting, not according to any sort of rules, and
good sportsmanship.
And good sportsmanship. And the British were kicked out because they weren't good sports, I guess.
No, we weren't. So they took their toys and they went home.
Yep. So don't say that the sort of guerrilla ragtag irregular actions are something we would never do. Of course we did. That's how we got our country away from the British, folks. So you can't say you're opposing terrorism because then you're opposing the way we became an independent United States of America, the way we kicked the British out. But nonetheless, you don't want to have somebody shooting you, bombing you for any reason. I don't care if they're called a terrorist or a hoodlum or a criminal or
right.
a gangster. If they do bad stuff, they deserve to be arrested with just cause and put into trial and punished however is appropriate.
During revolutionary times, the Americans were provoked. That was self-defense to a large degree. So, I mean, we were invaded, right? This is a little different with terrorism.
British Army did come over in force after we colonized here, but it was mainly, remember, taxation without representation.
But the guerrilla warfare took place because they were shooting at us. I mean, that was the only way we could win.
Well, our protest, like the Tea Party, actually on when they tossed the Tea Party aside, that was being met by more and more resistance by British forces. So they weren't letting protesters occupy or anything else, if you will. And we can see how that works out, too, in this year of the Arab Spring and so on. And it just escalated, of course. And, you know, read your history books, read the good history books about the real history of the Republic, and you'll see how much we embraced terrorism for a violent revolution. I'm not saying one is needed now, but certainly not. But the Libertarian Party concludes by saying we want to end military involvement in Iraq, and that's a big story. We did officially get out, although we still got some troops in the vicinity, and but they said we should get out of Afghanistan and many other countries immediately. And I saw Ron Paul on Jay Leno's show last week, and Jay Leno said, well, you know, where should we have foreign aid and our military forces in the world? Nowhere, he said. Nowhere.
Okay.
Let them take care of themselves. Bring them back. And, of course, they want to repeal the Patriot Act, which started this whole thing. It has nothing to do with patriotism at all, but was voted on by a majority of Democrats and Republicans and reinstated a couple years ago. So that's the opinion from the Libertarian Party, and also it turns out to be Ron Paul's position, which is not the Republican Party position at all. So, and he's close to winning the Iowa straw poll. Be interesting to see what the other Republicans do, because again, Gingrich, Romney, Rick Perry, Michelle Bachmann, they are all against Ron Paul on this point. They want to give as much power as possible to the president to do whatever he wants in terms of killing people,
right,
or imprisoning people. Yeah, it's just crazy. That's crazy. That's not our American traditions. You say, well, times have changed. Not in regard to that. I don't think any of you wants to be carried off in the middle of the night and then disappear forever from your family with no chance to prove your innocence, if you have any. Of course you don't. We hated that when that happened in Germany in World War II and before World War II and in Russia under Stalin and that. This is what dictators do. We must not give the president that kind of power, unlimited power to go to war or to kill people. It's just crazy. That's the worst thing that happened this year. And, okay, we're out of Iraq, sort of. But now, just last night, you know, and 2 days ago, hey, 100-1, our U.S. Congress, this is the Senate, they finally passed, and Obama signed the bill, giving him power to put financial restrictions on Iran, because he says Iran is working towards getting a nuclear weapon by improving their reactors. Ron Paul, by the way, last week says, no, that's absolutely false. That's not happening, not happening, not happening in Iran. Not yet, anyway. So Iran said, hey, if you sign that bill, we're going to stop 1/5 of the world's oil from getting through this passage, this water passage that's part of Iran's territory. We'll stop them. We got our ships out there now. They did a naval exercise. They got 10, 15 battleships out there. And the U.S. says, We've got plans to get that oil through. 20% of the oil that we need goes through this strait, as they call it, this passage, which Iran controls. Oh my gosh, what a mess! So hey, looks like we're going to be heading for another armed conflict. You know, we got to keep those soldiers in jobs, right? Most of them that are coming back from Iraq, they've been told, hey, in 6 months, by the way, don't get too comfortable. You're going to Afghanistan because they got to recycle soldiers because the ones in Afghanistan are getting killed. They got to send more cycle. We don't know when we're getting out of Afghanistan. And most of the people coming back from Iraq, most of the soldiers are being told 6 months to a year, it's all scheduled. You're going to be sent to Afghanistan. So, well, it's nice to know that they keep their jobs, but for no good end. I mean, their lives are threatened, and I don't see the purpose of more war in Afghanistan either. Well, okay, there you go. So top stories. Let's see. Killing of bin Laden. Okay, maybe he deserved it or not. I still would have liked to see it in trial. I know it would have been a media circus. I know, yeah. But nonetheless, he deserves some trial, and the evidence need to be presented. I hate to be a doubting Thomas, but I'm still not sure that the trail of 9/11 attacks led all that directly back to him. And of course, that's a problem of a trial. You may not have the evidence. You know, people that he knew, that he worked with, they sort of were involved this way or that, and it wasn't that clear evidence. And so, but if he didn't deserve to die and you can't prove it, then maybe you shouldn't kill him. At least I hope the government feels that way about me, you know? But you never know. Okay. Moving on here, I thought I would ask Dennis, as the editor of the Mirror newspaper, with only about 15 minutes to go before, Highway 61 starts up. Best in the Blues today. It's the Best of the Blues for 2011. Wow, what a great day to tune in, huh? Dennis, the Mirror newspaper. Now, of course, that's a newspaper primarily distributed on campus.
On campus.
And it covers campus events primarily for people who are students here, as in effect. What do you think the biggest or the second biggest, most important, significant stories about HFCC were for this year, 2011?
The no-brainer answer is, this is kind of funny, and you even said it earlier, the coyote. And that's simply because so many people were talking about what it could be on campus. Now, just to put things in perspective, the Mirror News comes out every 3 weeks, so we're not breaking news. We're not going to ever have any kind of breaking news. Mm-hmm. Our angle is always to look at the story and gauge the reaction, and that's really the news that goes into these particular articles. Mm-hmm. But this one was just too good. When our brand new photographer, Patrick Krupa, got a picture of the coyote. Yes, it was a coyote. Mm-hmm. Still is. Got a picture of the coyote when everyone around was calling it everything from a wild dog to a wolf to a bobcat. I actually heard somebody say, "Do you think it's a grizzly bear?" And I just walked away. But to get that photo was kind of a scoop for us. And it did make Dr. Mee said on more than once, she said, "Oh, that's awesome."
Yeah, the bottom line here is it was not a bobcat. That's what was in the media.
Important.
So the lesson there, and thanks to the Mirror News, even though you don't have circulation as wide as the other two newspapers,
not
of course, off campus, but the Mirror News got it right, got it straight. And it should just raise an interesting doubt and keep honest the Press and Guide and the Times Herald from either sensationalizing the news unnecessarily or digging a little deeper to get the real story.
And then the only other story that I could comment on is one, and I was going to say this anyway because it goes in effect in 2 days, is the smoking ban on campus. Mm-hmm. I think as we watch, I can't say the world, but at least in Michigan, we're watching more and more places go smoke-free, including U of M right next door. They've been smoke-free since July. Mm-hmm. As of January 1st, this campus will be completely smoke-free except for two designated, yet-to-be-determined areas and in the personal vehicles of the smoker. I just thought, right. I think that's very, very important.
Well, our buildings have been smoke-free for several years now, and this is the outdoor smoking ban, if you want to call it that, mm-hmm. so that all places on campus, except in your car, you can sit in the parking lot, apparently, in your own personal car.
Mm-hmm.
You get to prove it's your car. And you can smoke like crazy,
sure.
I guess, if you have to. We hope that you will consider stopping smoking for 2011 if you are a smoker, not because you come to this college, but just because it's better for your health if you don't smoke.
That's a fact.
So much evidence. That's a total fact. And the little bit of nicotine rush, I mean, drink another cup of coffee. You know, that's getting more and more healthy all the time.
The caffeine or the, well, actually coffee.
No, not the caffeine. You can drink, it depends on how it's processed, but even certain decaf processing gives you phytonutrients.
Absolutely.
That are actually pretty good for you.
The key is to make sure it's freshly brewed. I heard if you drink the coffee within 15 to 20 minutes of it being brewed, that's optimal.
No kidding.
That's what I read this recently.
Just like warm carrots are better, heated carrots and heated tomato sauce,
yep.
like in spaghetti, is better than just eating tomato sauce cold for some reason.
Because the heat breaks it down in some way, sure.
I love gazpacho soup, but it's cold. Darn
Do you it. Love it? Good.
Yeah, well, it's supposed to be served cold, but I mean, it's tomato soup, but apparently it's and there's usually chunks of tomato in gazpacho and so on, but it's
celery and peppers and onions.
Yeah,
wonderful.
But it's probably not too bad for you, but it's apparently warmed up for some reason. The cooking actually improves the nutritional value for your body of certain fruits and vegetables. Other people, raw food addicts, they will proclaim raw is the best always, but not in terms of fish necessarily. So watch your sushi
there
out
you
there.
Go.
But, okay. I was looking also at my list, and certainly for the college on campus, you know, the big landmark change is our new science building, which is being enlarged and renovated, and it should be open every part of it should be open for business by about April or
That's
so this
say.
Year.
Yep.
And I thought it was really sweet that there's a Christmas tree on top of that new part of the building. Somebody put a Christmas tree
on one of
there.
The beams there?
Yeah. And my daughter informed me that that's a tradition, I don't know how she knows, of steel workers.
Mm-hmm.
Steel workers, if they're in process of working on a building, of course, it's steel girded, it's the frame is steel, that they always put a Christmas tree up on top of whatever structure they're working on, if it happens to be over Christmas.
I've seen
so
that.
That's how it probably got there. But it doesn't light up at night, I don't think, but it's still up there. It's
right.
It's kind of cool. And wow, I mean, science, if we're going to save this planet, we've got to understand what science is all about. We have to use the scientific method. We have to apply the knowledge that can be verified in order to put the changes into place. And the students need to be educated in that, and because they're going to either save us or sink us in the next 50 years in terms of what is projected as our environmental problems.
And you're talking about that building, but remember that the classrooms in the what we call the old science building have been renovated, and they are actually functioning.
They're in service now. Yeah.
And then starting in the middle of January on Tuesdays in the newly refurbished planetarium, what we have right here at 7:30 on Tuesday evenings, it's totally free to everybody. Everyone in the public can come and enjoy the Winter Star Walk.
Okay.
And that it's narrated by our own Susan McGraw. And then there's people there from the Ford Amateur Astronomy Cup, too.
Yeah, it's usually, I forget, do you remember the time? It's usually about 7:30.
It's 7:30.
You need to get there and get in line.
7:20 is when
unless they've renovated the number of seats, it only seats about 70 people.
It's less now, actually, a few less. And it's more of a straight line. It's amazing. Anyway, the point is that they shut off the lights and they will not let people in for safety reasons after 7:30.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, yeah. No, we have wonderful programs here and state-of-the-art programs throughout the campus, and the science building renovations are going to really help and expand their offerings, too, into the latest science knowledge and really help our students. So looking forward to that opening, of course, for 2012. Let's see here. My picks for big stories, and maybe you have a couple, Dennis, too. We've only got about 3 or 4 minutes here before we want to conclude with the Stephen J. Dubner comment. Both Dearborn and Dearborn Heights millages passed.
I know that was my big story.
The basic support millages, and in Dearborn, the library support millage. Thank you, thank you, thank you for those people that were registered and who did vote. The cities had no other choice there, folks. And it is kind of graduated. If you have a bigger house and you own more property, you will be paying more in dollars to the city. But the city desperately needs it, folks. And in fact, those dollars are not added dollars from 3-4 years ago, because you've been paying less and less for the last 3-4 years. I know your property value has gone down, but the city just could not survive as we know it at all. Even though they're still cutting budgets in Dearborn Heights, we don't have the full story of what those cuts finally had to be in Dearborn Heights. We'll find out soon, I'm sure. And Dearborn still has to go through that process of cutting even for this year. But it would have been a disaster if those didn't go. And I clearly believe that, as did all of the elected leaders. And thank you to the majority of the community who did register, who did vote in November to get those passed. At least our cities can probably struggle through because of that.
I have...
Okay.
I think that's the most awesome story. And I think that I was a little bit, I don't know if you were surprised or not, but I was, to read that news, because I thought that the people were getting fed up. You know, I mean, a lot of things are going on in the city that we feel the city may have control over. And they weren't going the way we thought they might. I'm just thinking about some of the properties and things like that that I just looked at with my...
The only other national story that I loved, and there's not time enough to replay the editorial from... Jim Hightower, his commentary on this, which came out last year. Vermont is the first state in the nation to begin universal single-payer health care plan. It will supersede Obamacare, and it will be fair and equal to everybody, and free treatment for everybody that needs it, ongoing in Vermont. Might be a reason to go there, but they do have a tax on your pension there. But
it's a nice, it's a wonderful...
Wonderful concept. It's going to take a couple of years to, they were really hit badly by that hurricane. They lost a lot of covered bridges.
Really?
And you can never have enough covered bridges.
I used to live in New York, and we went up to New Hampshire and Vermont a couple times. It was just beautiful up there.
Well, I'm just saying it's a wonderful trend. Even people like Ron Paul would say if the state wants to do that and try it, it's okay. States' rights, you know, but he doesn't believe the federal government should do it. I think the federal government should really do it because they would decrease the cost. It would, I mean, one of the top two costs of all the police departments and cities for public employees and states for public employees is the cost of health care. The only way you're going to control those increases in cost, which keep happening every year, not because it's deserved, I don't feel, but these companies want that profit margin increased always, is to put it under the control either of state government or federal government. And, you know, Massachusetts is having some problems, some growth pains with their plan. It's not as comprehensive. I hate the part of Obamacare that requires every person to buy health insurance if they don't want it, although the cost for society as a whole and controlling those costs really demand universal single payer, which is, again, proven fact. To give better coverage, of course, no one is left uncovered. Everyone can feel free if they're sick to go to the hospital, to go to a doctor. There's no money changing hands. There's no money deducted from your check to a health care plan or going through 14 different hands in order to pay for it. Sure, you had to pay more taxes.
But this is exactly what you wanted, isn't it? A chance for,
right.
I think that if one of the states,
look to Vermont here.
If Michigan would, or preferably Michigan, but if anybody would do a fair tax, I think that we would like to see that work as well.
Absolutely.
So, no, yeah, good stories, good year. We interviewed a lot of good people, too.
Yeah, it's been quite a year, and I want to thank Dennis Reimars for being the faithful support and the producer of this journal show for 2011. Look forward to working with you next year.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Congratulations on your chance to work with WWJ News as an intern next year, too.
How cool is that?
Not being paid for that, but who knows, maybe someday.
I'm being paid with experience. You can't put a dollar value on
that. Right. So Happy New Year to all of our loyal listeners. Best of 2012. Haven't mentioned the end of the world, but, you know, it's going to happen sometime anyway. So live every day the best you possibly can, always planning for a better tomorrow. That's what I think. And if it doesn't happen tomorrow, you still did the best you could. Wow.
Wow. Write that down, too.
Yeah. Take note.
We're going to get a calendar of Jay Cornick sayings.
Yeah. Well,
Happy New Year, everyone.
Other people have said it before me.
Oh, yeah?
Happy New Year to all of you. It's WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Here is Stephen J. Dubner from Freakonomics, often featured for the whole hour, or almost the whole hour, on our Monday forum from 6 to 7 p.m.
Hey, this is Stephen Dubner from Freakonomics Radio. You know all those public radio fundraisers? They raise millions of dollars. You know what they do with the money? We stole some of it, and we bribed Marketplace, the big American public media show, to let us do our Freakonomics segment on there. Here you go.
Support for the Freakonomics Radio podcast comes from Stitcher Smart Radio, offering the Stitcher mobile app. With Stitcher's free app for mobile phones, listeners can get the latest episodes of Freakonomics, NPR, This American Life, and thousands of other podcasts on demand without downloading or syncing. The free Stitcher Smart Radio mobile app can be found in the iPhone or Android app stores or at stitcher.com/freak.
From APM, American Public Media, and WNYC, this is Freakonomics Radio on Marketplace. Here's the host of Marketplace, Jeremy Hobson.
It's Freakonomics time. Every 2 weeks, we explore the hidden side of everything. And today, why the first decision you make in 2012 is riskier than you think. Here's Stephen Dubner.
Happy New Year, everybody. Now, how are you getting home from that party? If you're in New York City, where I live, good luck getting a taxi. And if you've had some champagne and you're even thinking about driving home, well, don't.
Drinking and driving is not only against the law, but it can also be deadly. Over the limit, under arrest.
Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
All right, so maybe you'll walk home. Smart move, right?
That's a terrible idea. Walking drunk is one of the most dangerous activities you can engage in.
That's Steve Levitt, He's my Freakonomics friend and co-author. He's also an economist at the University of Chicago.
Truly, if you're faced with exactly two choices, walking drunk or driving drunk, you absolutely should drive drunk.
Now, wait a minute. Levitt is not advocating that people drive drunk. We know how incredibly dangerous that is. But what about drunk walking? Is that dangerous? Consider a few numbers. In 2009, the most recent year for which we have data, about 34,000 people died in traffic accidents. Roughly half of them were drivers, 41% of whom were drunk. Now, there were about 4,000 pedestrians killed, and 35% of them were drunk. Here's Levitt again.
For every mile walked drunk, turns out to be 8 times more dangerous than the mile driven drunk. So just to put it simply, if you need to walk a mile from a party to your home, you're 8 times more likely to die doing that than if you jump behind the wheel and drive your car that same mile.
Now, there are some caveats here. A calculation like this requires some assumptions because there's no government database on drunk walking. Also, people drive drunk much farther distances than they'd walk drunk. And most important, a drunk walker can't hurt or kill someone else the way a drunk driver can. That said, the death toll from drunk walking is undeniable.
The danger of impaired walking is not insignificant. And certainly when it comes down to you, it's definitely significant.
Thomas Esposito is a trauma surgeon at Loyola University Health System in the Chicago area. He's used to seeing a New Year's Day spike in pedestrians who've been hit by cars. As a matter of fact, January 1st is the deadliest day of the year for pedestrians, and 58% of the people who died were drunk.
I'd rather work New Year's Eve than New Year's Day, because a lot of the time on New Year's Day, that's when people start to realize someone's missing, where are they? And then they find them at the bottom of the stairs or on the side of the road injured.
Esposito also has personal experience with drunk walking. A few years ago, his cousin was hit by a car and killed while walking home from a New Year's party. He'd been drinking, thought it was better to leave his car and go home on foot. Esposito believes we've done a pretty good job getting out the don't drink and drive message, but that we could do a lot better with don't drink and walk. Here's Steve Levitt again.
For 20 years, we've been told you should never, ever drive drunk. We should have been told you should never, ever walk drunk and you should never, ever drive drunk. And because nobody thought about it when we were coming up with what was moral and immoral, somehow now drunk walking just can't find its way into the immoral box.
So listen, have a great New Year's celebration, but if a friend has been drinking and starts reaching for the car keys or decides to set off on foot, don't let him. Because remember, friends don't let friends walk drunk. I'm Stephen Dubner for Marketplace.
For old time's sake and days gone by, for better days we knew, I drink a toast to